You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and boy, I'm so glad to be back in the studio today with my fabulous friend, Ellen Little.
Thank you. We missed you.
We missed you too.
Yeah, but I loved following all your travels and the wonderful time that you had with your family.
Yes,
it was fantastic. But Joe Shim and I, we had a blast. I got to tell you, last week it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's so nice to be able to take a little break and go away and just visit with family and friends. And you know me, I've always wanted to go to London, mm-hmm. and so I took the opportunity when it came up, and I went and I saw my aunt and cousins. And oh my gosh, Ellen, what a great place! The buildings, the designs on them.
See, and I know what an affection you have for the Queen and Buckingham Palace, like the Kennedys, the Kennedys in the United States. The Queen and that whole Parliament all over there. Did you get a chance to see all of that?
Yes, I did. I went to I toured Kensington Palace, mm-hmm. and I saw where Queen Victoria was born. I actually saw her clothes and her crib, and marvelous. Everything was so great. The palace was beautiful. I also went, I didn't tour Buckingham Palace, but we went by, and I saw the changing of the guards. I went to the Princess Diana Memorial, and I have to tell you, I cried.
Yeah,
I walked in the water. I waded into my cousin and I. I didn't realize how many relatives I have in England, so I will be going back to visit.
Well, you have 18 brothers and sisters, Sita, so chances are you have a big family.
Yes, yes, yes. And also, another thing about England, we always talk about healthcare, and we talk about universal healthcare, single-payer system, Medicare for all and all that. But actually, I grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, where we do have universal healthcare as well. But it was such a difference to see it in action in the UK. The shared responsibility and how people feel about it. And contrary to what a lot of people think, the people that I met on the tube or in the buses or in the restaurants, they all like it. I didn't meet one person that did not like the idea that everybody is paying something towards healthcare. And not only that, I mean, so many of the people that we sat with on the buses and trains and stuff, that we just strike up conversations with them. Were telling me when you give birth to a child, you are allowed to stay home between 3 to 6 months. Some of them stay home almost a year because of the high cost of daycare. And also, they're very much into the nature versus nurture, you know? Mm-hmm. So people believe that if you stay home with the children and you could bond with them a little bit more. They do believe in breastfeeding and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of neat. So I didn't find one person that said they liked, they hated the system.
Right.
I'm sure there are people that there's pros and cons to everything, right?
Sure, absolutely.
But at the same time, they liked it.
And the point, like you said, everything's a little bit more expensive, and that could be part of it. I mean, and that might be more part of the United States system of why we don't want it, maybe why we're fighting it is because some of the things. But when you look at the benefits, and some of the other things that you said to me, even right before the show, about the fact that everybody kind of takes care of their own health as well.
It's a lot of preventative medicine. A lot of people walk.
Yeah.
And also, I listened to the BBC a lot when I was there as well. There was a segment about depression in the elderly and depression in general, how they were coping with it. And they'd say, you know, we had a friend that came on the show once and talked about the four Fs, mm-hmm. family, friends, food, and a little finances. Mm-hmm. It's the truth.
Yeah.
But the most important thing to fight depression, they were saying, was to have a group of people that you trust, that you see. put down the texts in and the phones and all that and talk to people. Look them in the eye. Find common ground. Join a group. Stay engaged in your community like we do. Mm-hmm. A lot of things like that. And food. Food always brings people together, you know?
Absolutely. Especially curry.
Yeah, it does. It does. So I had a lot of fun.
I don't
know
what it is in that curry, man.
But you know, Ellen, when you travel a lot, I mean, a lot of people who don't even own a passport pass judgment on other countries and other people. But when you travel, even if you're just traveling the United States, within a state, and you meet people, everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants safety and security. Right. They want affordable housing. They want an education for their children. People want a job with benefits, which include health care. And people want young men and women like our friend Kieran Shea, who's going to be talking later, to give back to community and, you know, they excel in what they believe in. And have mentors that guide them, and you know, through life. So it's kind of interesting that everybody wants the same thing. It's just how we get there,
right?
You know?
Exactly right.
And so, on that note, I just wanted to tell our listening friends on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today. One of our guests is going to be calling in from Texas, and her name is, I know Ellen, we're going to say the name right this time, Uchenna Ume. And she is a physician. She was born in Nigeria, attended medical school in Nigeria, an all-girls boarding school, and she's calling in to talk today a little bit about her dream. She just quit her job, and she's going to be starting, she's doing a blog, and she's going to be talking to children who are anxious, who are depressed, and she wants to use her expertise as a physician to help these children, and I think she's on to help society, actually, not just children.
Yeah.
So she's on the phone, and I'm going to let her talk a little bit about herself. So good morning, Dr. Ume. Thanks for calling in. Are you there? We have to find her. There she is.
There
you are. And we were hoping...
Live radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Well, thank you for calling in on our show on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We really appreciate it. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Where do I start? I've got 49 years to tell you about. But let me see. So most recently, I guess I'm going to go back about maybe almost 30 years ago. I graduated from medical school, and I moved to the United States of America for the greener pastures that everybody talks about. And so I went to residency at Howard University Hospital, HU, and basically finished my residency, got married, started my own private practice, and I did that for about 13 and a half, almost 14 years. Then I jumped ship, joined the Air Force, did my thing with the Air Force for about 4 years, and in the last 2 years, I've been working with a multi-group practice here in San Antonio. The main thing that I think in the last maybe 8 to 10 years, I started noticing that a lot of my patients are becoming depressed. A lot of my teenagers are coming in with depression, symptoms of depression, anxiety, a lot of bullying, a lot of cutting, a lot of self hurt issues going on. So as a matter of fact, in my office, the girls always say, oh, Dr. Ome gets all the patients with the issues because they somehow just come to me. So I decided, you know, maybe I should answer this call. I believe it's like a Samuel moment, you know, here I am, Lord, send me kind of thing. So in the last few months, I've been just ruminating and thinking about how do I answer the call? How do I give back to these kids that have kind of nurtured my practice and just made me whole pretty much? And so the only thing I could think about was to, I guess, venture out on my own and try to start something with the teenagers. So my dream is to maybe start a nonprofit with teens that are at risk and see how I can help them from that angle, especially with the depressed teens, the suicidal teens, and stuff like that.
Right, and you also noticed that there were issues with their weight problem as well, and you want to see if you can use therapy to help them as well with that.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, what I'm going to open up is a teen wellness center. I'm going to center on the whole teen, not just their depression. In San Antonio, at least, I don't know about where you live in Florida, but in San Antonio, most of my patients also have issues with being overweight or being obese. And nothing affects your self-esteem like that. And we live in a world where everybody wants to be slim and skinny, not necessarily healthy, but slim and skinny.
Well, we live in a world where we're judged a lot. It's a lot of judging. Well, I wish you were in studio. Next time, we're going to have to figure out a way to get you here. We've got in studio with us today a 13-year-old. His name is Kieran Shea, and he's going to be talking later about all the wonderful things he's doing. And I have to say that a lot of his well-being and why he's such a well-rounded child is because of his family and his foundation. So let's talk a little bit. What is it about today's society where children don't have the guidance and mentors that they need?
I think overall speaking, I think it's a sign of the times. A lot of the parents, maybe some of them want to be their kids' friends as opposed to their kids' parents. They don't want to, quote-unquote, hurt their feelings and be strict and disciplinary with them. They're not as supportive as I've seen. There's a lot of homes that are, you know, broken up in my own family. Myself, I'm a divorced mom. I am remarried, but I'm divorced, and so my kids have had to deal with that themselves. But I had to put on my big girl shoes and buckle up and, you know, try to be their mom and their dad and everything else in between, but not without the help of the entire village that it takes to raise them, which is my own family, my parents, my brothers and sisters, my friends. It's been difficult. So overall, we're seeing more and more families being broken. Maybe people either choose to have kids on their own as single parents, but a lot of the kids that have had out of wedlock, and they don't have that structure to fall back on. The grandparents are doing a lot of the work, and there's only so much work that they can do. There's a lot of peer pressure. You don't even want me to start talking about that aspect as well. So overall, social media is not helping at all. People want to look like what they see on TV, but it's most times not possible, as you can imagine. So it's multifactorial. I wouldn't say just the family, but the family being the center, of course, that affects. If the family, if the center is not holding, then the child, and, you know, in Nigeria, they say, then things will fall apart. So,
right. And, you know, so we just want to tell our listeners that we're talking to Dr. Uchenna Umeh, and she's a pediatrician with almost 30 years of experience, calling in from Texas. And we're talking today about depression in the adolescents, as well as depression and anxious and suicidal teens, and what we can do to help them. So in your practice, I would think you would feel so helpless when people came in and you were able to diagnose and treat them, but yet still they have to go back out in the community and there's no treatment for them. So this is probably one of the reasons why you decided to try to open up the center that you're going to be doing opening.
Yes, partially there is. I mean, there's just not enough. I wouldn't say that there's no treatment for them. I think overall in the world that we live in now, there's a huge stigma with the word depression. I mean, I'm Nigerian, and I know, Sita, we talked about this a while back. You're also, you know, an immigrant. And where we come from, depression is almost not mentioned as a clinical problem. I mean, it's like we're all in denial.
It's a stigma. The people, yeah, it's a stigma. Yes, it's swept under the carpet all the time. Well, not all the time, but most of the time, people don't want to be associated with it.
It takes a lot for me to even bring it out of it. I have to milk it out. So my nurses know now. They're awesome nurses. They know now that once I have a teenager, I don't care what the child came for. They came for a headache, for a splinter, for leg pain. They have to give them what we call a modified teen depression screen. And believe it or not, 7 to 8 to 9 times out of 10, they come back positive. Some of them might just be copycats because they don't know any better, but a lot of them are actually hurting. A lot of them are actually hurting. In San Antonio specifically, we have some help. We have some the San Antonio Behavior Health, we have Clarity, we have Laurel Ridge. We have some areas where we can treat the teenagers, but they can only do so much, number one. And number two, the teenagers don't want to go in there themselves. No one wants to talk about depression. And then I find that a lot of my patients, their moms are also having issues with depression. So it's huge. And then sometimes I diagnose...
You almost have to treat the whole family.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes I diagnose the mother on my way to diagnosing the patient. And of course, there are other comorbid disorders like anxiety, thyroid disease, overweight, ADHD, that all confound those, you know.
So tell us, what are some of the warning signs of depression in teens?
So the first thing about depression is sometimes you don't even know it's a warning sign. So what I want my parents to know is, if you're sitting down waiting for your child to come up and tell you, "Mom, I'm depressed," it's not going to happen. For the most part, you don't even know what it is. When a child becomes sad more than they're happy, they might become withdrawn more than they used to be before. They might start hanging out with people that, you know, you don't approve of. They have a lot of trouble with sleeplessness. A lot of them can't sleep at night. They're staying up at night. They're tossing and turning. Or they might have excessive sleep, the opposite of sleeplessness. They don't want to wake up. They have decreased energy. They don't want to do anything. They are no longer motivated, you know. They are somatizing. Somatization is basically when a child complains of a particular symptom. Oh, I have a headache, or I have a leg pain, and it just doesn't go away. A lot of times they skip school. They don't want to go to school, so they become truants because they want to stay home. They're just simply not motivated. And what happens in a child like that, they start hanging out with the wrong crowd, and before you know it, they start trying substances. Oh, try this. It made me feel better. Try this. Just smoke it for a little bit, and you might feel better. And before you know it, the child gets hooked. So a lot of times the children might become withdrawn. I think the most thing that I notice is they become withdrawn and they're hanging around their phones a lot. The more they hang out on their phone, on social media, the more they get depressed.
Yeah, we were just talking about that people have forgotten how to have a face-to-face conversation. So we have in studio with us our good friend, Kieran Shea, and he's going to jump in here and ask a question.
So, so my name is Kieran, and I have a question.
Hi, Kieran.
Hi. If you sense your child is depressed, what are the steps to be taken?
I think the very first step is to accept it. Again, like Sita and I were talking about, a lot of times we're in denial. As a parent, you're in denial either because you don't know that your child is depressed, or even when you now know, you still are in denial. I had a patient that committed suicide a few years ago, partially because the mother was like, "No, I don't think, you know, I had depression. I did okay. He's going to be fine." So the first thing you want to do is to accept that your child is indeed depressed. And the second thing you want to do is you want to reach out. You want to reach out to the child. You want to see if they will talk to you. That will depend on the kind of relationship you already have with your child. If you have a good, open relationship, your child might open up to you. If you have a family member that the child is maybe closer to, you can have them open up to that person. That's another way you can do it. Or if all else fails, I'm always here. The doctors are always there, the pediatricians especially. We will give our last dime to help a patient in need.
Yeah, so it's all about communication too, doctor. It's all about communication too. They have to be able to trust someone as well. So let's talk a little bit about medication. What if the child have to take medications? And there's so many parents out there who are very worried about the side effects. So let's talk a little bit about the medications and the side effects, or even like, you know, back home, they have home remedies as well. Sometimes they'll just give you a nice cup of tea and a massage with good old coconut oil and you feel better, right?
And that's the island girl talking. That's exactly right.
Yes.
So indeed, with regards to medication, I generally, depending on the score that the child has on the PhD, the PHQ-9 is the modified depression screen that I spoke about. Depending on the score, if a child is coming up just mildly depressed, I usually recommend counseling first, behavioral therapy, getting to see a counselor. That is worth its weight in gold. If a child is coming up moderately to severely depressed, at that point, I usually recommend medication. But the truth is that the American Academy of Pediatrics does recommend a combination of medication and counseling as your best bet. And yes, so most of the medicines, as you know, nobody wants their child to be on medication. I have more of my parents saying, "No, I want to try it on myself. No, I want to try it on my own," before they start on medicine. And I don't blame them. There are some major side effects of these medications. One of them is the child will gain weight. And so if you have a child who's already overweight, who's already worried about their weight, they may not want to take that medication. You have to kind of sell it to them. The other thing is the child that's taking the medication might actually become suicidal most of those medicines do have a side effect of suicidal ideation. So it becomes like a double-edged sword. You have a child who's possibly suicidal, and then you're giving them medication that can possibly cause them to be suicidal.
And there's so a lot of them ask Google, and then a lot of them go and Google the side effects of every single drug on Google, and makes a lot of, I mean, it causes the doctors to think twice about prescribing medication as well, because people are so informed, but sometimes misinformed too.
Yes, sometimes they're misinformed.
Yes, self-diagnosing.
One of my favorite mugs that I got for Christmas last year was the one that says, "Don't let your Google search confuse you about my medical degree," or something like that.
Yes,
that is true. Whereas Google is always there. I always ask the mom, I say, "Well, if you wanted to buy a pair of shoes, would you ask Google?" They said no. I said, "Well, why would you ask Google when it comes to your child and your child's health?" So I get their attention that way. I mean, you always want to ask a doctor in the end. You always want to ask a doctor. And then even when it comes to counseling, I do appreciate the fact that the first counselor you go to might not be the best counselor. They might not click. Even the first doctor you go to might not click. Like everything else in life, you have to give it enough time and try to see. You might have to try a couple of counselors before you find the one that fits.
Like it comes down to trust. Well, you know, on the way here, Kieran and I were talking about, you know, why he's such a well-rounded kid. And one of the things I understand, he plays a lot of sports. And so I'm going to let him jump in here as a 13-year-old. This is the age group that's crucial from the age, I think, of 10 to 14 to catch these kids. So he's going to tell us a little bit about what him and his friends does. You know, it's like an alternative thing to take in medication. Or not that anything is wrong with him, but I think when you play sports and you have a lot of friends, it helps. So tell us a little bit what you do when you're home and you want to do some fun things, Kieran.
Right. So, yeah, when I'm just hanging out at home, let's say over the weekends or during summer, I like playing basketball, football, going to swim with my friends. And so I just like hanging out with my friends, sometimes hopping on the Xbox, playing video games. But I just enjoy spending time with other people. And I feel like it's just really helps me. Let's say if I'm stressed out a little bit or worried about a test coming up, I just forget about it, just have some fun for a couple of hours, and then maybe get back to studying or take a nap or get some rest. And so, yeah, that's really what
Absolutely. I agree with you, Kieran. That's a very, very good thing to do. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I recommend with my patients is I want you to go out and exercise. And then, of course, you said something else. You touched on the fact that you hang out with your friends. That's what I like to call human FaceTime. It's amazing the power of hanging out with somebody else, just being in the presence of someone. And that's why the telephone and the cell phone and the presence of social media is actually increasing the number of depressed teens that we have now, especially in girls. If you spend more time on social media, the studies have shown that if you spend up to 5 hours or more on social media, you have a higher chance of being depressed. And then, of course, when you're depressed, before you know it, you become suicidal. So you touched on something very, very important. That's one, hanging out with your friends, and number two, doing fun stuff with them. Nothing will ever replace that. And, of course, sleeping. Sleeping is something that you touch also, just resting your brain and just sleeping. I also recommend journaling. I love to write, so I recommend journaling a lot. And for those who can manage it, meditation and or yoga is always something that you can also do.
So tell us, where did we lose the messaging in America? So because we don't see children playing outside like they used to. We used to see the free parks filled with children running and playing tag and visiting with their friends and, you know, just having a good time, people having barbecues and picnics. I saw a lot of that when I was in London recently, people just hanging out in the parks and enjoying nature and blankets and all, you know. But I notice here in Brevard, I mean, I know we utilize our public parks, but a lot of places are not utilized. Where do we lose that message that people are not exercising anymore, not just their bodies, but their minds, and enjoying the environment and nature?
I think, honestly, it happened so insidiously that we didn't even know when it happened. And it's just like, boom, we're right there. It doesn't also help that we're having a lot of cases of shootings or kidnapping. I mean, that doesn't help. So as a parent, you're like, well, I don't know if I want my child to go out there because it's not even really safe out there. However, I believe, and I do have studies that have proven that the entrance of the cell phone in about 2010 to 2012, when everyone pretty much was getting their own personal cell phones, that was when we got a parallel increase in depression and, of course, suicidal ideation in teens. So somewhere along the line, we just wanted to stay indoors more, and because we just kind of found out that the outdoors is no longer our friend. It doesn't help that in Texas, for instance, we have effects of global warming. It's really, really hot. It was 108 degrees the other day. So you don't really want to go outside and play, even if you want to. I'm an outdoor person. I love the outdoors. I love to exercise. But I can't find the time to go out because I'm working. However, when I get home, you can be sure I'm hitting the outdoors.
And it doesn't help that some politician doesn't believe in global warming either. That's a whole different show.
I think they're calling it a whole different name.
That's a whole different show.
One of the things you talked about was journaling, though. And I have to tell you, I looked up your blog, and I wanted our listeners to know about your blog that you have.
Thank you.
I don't know how long ago you started it, but the articles that you have on there are fantastic.
I only started about 4 weeks ago. I only have like 6 articles. So thank you for mentioning my blog. That's my baby. That's my personal blog. I've been writing for years since I think able to write. I just never published anything. And so I have my 15th birthday coming around the corner. So I gave myself the deadline to try to get something on paper. And so I've been writing for so long, I said, you know what, I'm going to start blogging. And then I forced one of my classmates at the MBA school to make a blog for me. And I said, you know, blogging, it's about 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks at the
moment. Well, we're so proud of you.
Really proud of the stuff.
We're proud of you that you decided to follow your dreams and do what you know. And we're here 100% for you. So tell us, how can we help you achieve your mission? What can we do at Viewpoint with Sita and friends to help you to achieve this? Because it's so interesting to see someone like you that's actually taking the time to spend on bullying and depression and what's going on with our teens, because they are the future. They are the next generation.
Well, and it's almost becoming an epidemic. I mean, the CDC is even mentioning it as an epidemic.
Yes.
So how can we help you? Give us your website and how people can find your blog and all that.
I wish I had a website yet. It is in the making. I promise you that in the next few weeks it's going to be up and running. But my blog is wordsbyblackbutterfly.wordpress.com. So I am the ultimate black butterfly. So Words by Black Butterfly. And then I'm also on Facebook. I do a weekly Facebook Live on Ask Doctor. You have to spell it out. Ask Doctor Lulu, L-U-L-U, where I discuss nothing but teens, and more teens. We're talking about teen health, teen mental health, anything that has to do with teens, and we're going to be discussing that. So I'm really, really proud of my little Facebook Live, and I'm really, really proud of my blog. So just be on the lookout. I have a couple of things coming up. One of them is books. I'm writing books about teenagers, and I'm writing a parent coaching book also. My brain works 200 miles an hour, as you can tell. So I have a lot of those things in the works. I will keep posted, Sita. I know I see you on Facebook. And thank you so much for what you do. I mean, I appreciate you running for office. I know we had talked about the fact that I'm threatening to run for office just so I can abolish the babies and the 18-month-olds that walk into my office with a handheld phone. I can't take that. It just drives me nuts when I see a baby.
Well, you see
a lot.
You see a lot. And the thing is, you also notice the socioeconomic standards that people have in their lives as well, and how you can help as a physician. And, you know, we're all in this together. And so I look at your posts and I read your blogs, and I'm inspired and motivated. And I thank you I really thank you for it. Ellen and I would love to have you back on again. And I was just going to say, if you need an intelligent, well-rounded 13-year-old later on, we know just a fella
just
who can call in on your podcast. When you start your podcast, we'll hook you up with him as well. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, I forgot to mention my podcast. That is true. My podcast is coming up. And I will definitely reach out to Kieran. And now that I know you're there, I'm going to go out of my way to come to Florida so I can do the next one live.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds awesome. Well, thank you, Dr. Ume. And thank you for calling in and sharing your wisdom with us. We've posted your blog as well as all of your information on our Facebook pages. And we'll have an MP3 and a podcast of this show that you can use on your podcast afterward. But we're going to take a quick station break to hear from our great sponsors. And we'll be right back right after these few words.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no-credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Every week, Ellen and I have a fun, unscripted, very informative, and quite entertaining show.
Yes.
And this is the nice thing about live radio. Because it's not scripted, we speak from our hearts. And we want to help people in the community and showcase the great things that people are doing who are engaged in our nonprofits, in our schools, folks who are trying to help the environment, clean
people
up
that
our
are
lagoon.
Solving problems, really. Solving, I mean, that's what it boils down to.
We're not, you know, we care about things like when we see red tide, when we see dead fish.
Mm-hmm.
We care about public education when we have children that come on our show and talk about trying to study with a hungry belly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
the stomachs absolutely. Are empty, but yet still they're expected to get A's in school. And so we talk about things that help our community and around our nation every week. And we're going on 7 years, and we really haven't missed a Monday.
We have not. Nope.
Yeah. So we're all about equality and opportunity and justice and, most important, respect for each other. We try to empower our women, our teens, our people here all around the world. And we try to bring people on the show that when you listen to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, you say, I learned something.
That's right.
Right?
So and we also love to celebrate young people that are blazing paths.
And Ellen is pretty smitten right now with our guest.
I'm totally
She's
smitten.
Been chatting with our friend Kieran Shea. He's 13 years old. He's a seventh grader at Holy Trinity Episcopal Academy in Melbourne. And at 10 years of age, Kieran and his friends designed an artificial hand for a boy from Minnesota, mm-hmm. right? Who had lost his hand at 6 months old. And he's going to tell us how they designed his hand. And in addition to that, he's going to tell us a little bit about how karate and playing piano and a great foundation that he's had helped him in his life. And he also participated in the Duke Talent Identification Program. So it's just, he's one kid, but he's got such a bio already at the age of 13.
Absolutely. And one of the things, when you first got here, we were talking about what your inspiration was, how you got started with this particular invention.
Right.
And I was just so inspired by the way you said it that everybody needs to hear this story. So lay it on us.
All right.
So tell us, so introduce yourself first. Get comfortable because it's just unscripted. We're just going to be your aunties right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So hey everyone, as Ms. Sita said, I'm Kieran Drew Shea, and I live in Satellite Beach, Florida, and I'm going into eighth grade now. And so pretty much what my inspiration for helping others and making this prosthetic hand was pretty much the people who are around me. In my school, there's so many kind people who just want to do good for the world. And so during lunch periods, as well as science and math periods, a couple of my friends and I got together, and we actually decided to help other people, but we didn't know what exactly we could do. So we started brainstorming. And one of the IT managers at our school actually told us about a program called Enable. So basically, this program will pair us up with someone else who's in need of a prosthetic limb. So we eventually got paired up with a 13-year-old boy at the time, 2 years older than us, in Minnesota. And he lost his fingers on one of his hands at an early age due to an accident. And so we decided to help him, and we just really wanted to help the world and give the gifts that have been given to us to others. And really, we were blessed to have two hands and be healthy. But this young man didn't really experience what two hands was, and we really wanted to help him out. And that's what really inspired me, as well as my two other friends, to make a prosthetic hand.
And you, because of your background, because your parents as well, too, you've always been interested in the way the medical mechanics work.
Right.
Which I thought was really cool. So yes. How did you come up with you and your friends?
Are you trying to say it's in his genes?
It could be.
Yeah.
It could
there
be.
There it is.
But how did you and your friends come up with the idea that you could actually do this, that you could make this hand that would...
So it was a lot of support from my family. My mom really played a big role into it, as well as I assume their families as well. But really, we just thought we could do it when we heard his story. And we also talked to him with like Google Chats, as well as Skype and FaceTime. And we got to know who he was as a person, and not just, oh, he's somebody who lost some
disabled,
fingers.
Disabled, yeah.
He's disabled.
Another statistic.
Right.
Yeah.
He's somebody, and he's actually a person with a story. And it was really interesting and cool to get to know him as a person and as a friend. And I think it really clicked when... he just told us about all of his life experiences living with just one hand. And we're like, no, this is the person. We're going to help him out. We're just going to go through whatever lengths and help him experience what we've experienced.
And you have such a passion for that, right? Where do you get your passion from?
I feel like just helping others is my biggest passion in life, and just wanting to make a difference. I do want to go into medicine, particularly biomedical engineering, so that I can make the mechanics and help save lives behind what doctors operate with. And I really feel like helping others is my biggest passion.
So I was reading your bio that your mom sent. Oh, I don't know if you typed it up, but you started tutoring algebra to 10th graders when you were in the third grade. Did I get that correct?
Yeah. So I was actually
doing... Where were you when I was in college?
Yeah, yeah. So this is not a misprint. You were in third grade and you were tutoring 10th graders.
Yes. As a 9-year-old, I was doing these... have you heard what Kumon is?
Yes. My daughter, Jasmine, went to Kumon, and I highly recommend it for people... who have children who are struggling with math and science and English. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I cut out, you know what I did for
I went
that.
To Sylvan.
That you know what I did for
Kumon? Copy.
Well, I didn't have anything. I was a kid. We had no money. But I highly recommend, you know, I have friends that would say to me, not friends, just people I work with and stuff, they'll say, well, we can't afford Kumon. But what we did is we didn't buy Starbucks. Mm-hmm. We didn't eat out. We sacrifice a lot so that the extra disposable income we had at home will go to Kumon. So for people who probably, you know, spend a little extra, like my husband would say to his staff, he would say, well, you buy lunch every day, you know, for $8 to $10 an hour from McDonald's or Burger King or wherever. But he said, I bring 2 slices of bread, some cheese and fruit. And so that money I put towards my children's education. So take it from there. You did go to Kumon. So tell us a little bit about Kumon and how it helped you.
Right. So Kumon did help me. So basically what it is it's a program starting with very basic mathematics as well as English principles, such as learning how to read, basic addition, counting, things like that. And as you progress through the different quote-unquote levels, you get into harder concepts such as algebra, trig, geometry, and even calculus. And then the reading portion, you start reading classic literature such as Shakespearean plays, The French Lieutenant's Woman, and some more just to name a few. And so basically it's like... For me, at least, I could focus on my other classes, such as science, such as history, band, and things like that, and not have to worry about, oh, there's a math test coming up. I really need to study all weekend for this because I've already learned that in Kumon, and it's really helped me not only with the didactic portion, but it's also helped me manage my time because we'd have these little worksheets.
So it's made a commitment. You made a commitment.
Right.
So what kind of reception did you get from the 10 graders when you were teaching them math?
So basically, I thought that they would be a little bit embarrassed or shy because they're in 10th grade and I'm 9 years old helping them. But actually, they were super nice and they loved it. In fact, one of the girls who's now in UF and doing very well, who I tutored, one of her friends was struggling in math as well and was like, hey, do you have a tutor? Could I get his number or something like that? Because I need help with my math too. And she's like, no, you get your own tutor. Yeah. He's my tutor. So
you never give up your babysitter, your house cleaner, or your tutor.
That's right.
Those are the three.
Kieran Shea, you never give him up. And I hope your mother is tuning in, or all our friends, because Dr. Nikita Dhruv, you've done an excellent job, and your dad as well, with this young man. So now, one of the quotes that you sent me, which I think is so interesting, it says, education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world. I love that, because that's how I, in addition to saying that life is a vacation, I really like that quote. And you're 13 years old. How can you inspire others who does not believe that? Because, right now in our country, you were fortunate that you attend public school, private school.
Right.
But there's so many children that live in communities in public schools that don't have that opportunity. So what is your message to help those children and those communities?
Yeah, so I think that education truly is the most powerful weapon to change the world. It's truly amazing because going back to this hand, my friends and I were advanced in math. And so we were able to size up his good and bad hand without the fingers to make that near-perfect prosthetic hand. And so we basically used the knowledge that we've been given to help him. And so...
And it was your environment. Who
right.
Your mentors, who you're with.
Yeah, of
right.
course, yeah.
Well, and also the exposure to the tools to be able to do that, which a lot of kids
don't have.
Yeah.
You know, who has the exposure to a 3D printer? Which is what you used. But by the way, those of you who are out there thinking, oh, I don't have exposure to a 3D, there are. FIT has created something on Palm Bay Road. They have the Innovation Center. There used to be where Wild Manta is now. There used to be the Knowledge Exchange where they were really popular items, the 3D printer. So there are accessibilities. Even if you don't have the knowledge that they're out there, the resources are incredible to be able to do that.
Right, you just have to Google it.
Well, and you just have to hang out with Kieran and his friends to get the
Google
idea.
Where in Melbourne, Florida, can I find a 3D printer?
Right, exactly.
So one of the things that people always talk about is how we pull each other up by the bootstraps, right? And we say that pull yourself up by the bootstrap, but that doesn't really happen, you know, by itself. The strap just doesn't come up like that. You need somebody, a parent, a teacher, a coach, somebody who is hell-bent on helping you. So right. Who was that person that says, I am going to help you and mentor you?
All right, so I think my friends did have a huge part, but I'd have to give this to my mom. She's been there pretty much all of my life, and she's really helped me excel. And I remember when I'm struggling with Kumon packets or worksheets, or I'm not really doing so well on my science fair board and I need some help or some inspiration, she would just be there and just say, hey, look, you could do this or that to make it a little bit better, but you're already off to a great start. And some of the times, my mom would just be dead honest with me and say, look, you got to change this to make it better. So
a little bit of constructive criticism.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Indian mothers know how to do that.
Yeah.
And we can hug you and kiss you at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, whenever I've seen you with your mom, you are her best friend. And I could always feel that.
Yeah.
You're well loved. But you're involved in so many other things. What are some of the extracurricular activities that help you to have this foundation?
So some of my other curricular activities are karate and piano. And so I love playing instruments. I love music. I'm also in the high school band playing the clarinet. But I think that these activities really helped me out because karate, which a couple months ago I achieved the level of a junior black belt after 8 years. But I think karate's really helped me out in the sense that it's just a place where you can go and kind of breathe and relax. And
discipline.
Yeah,
teaches you and teamwork.
Right, and everyone thinks that martial arts, whether it be karate or taekwondo or et cetera, are just about punching, breaking boards, and fighting. No, it's really not, because it's more spiritual, and you really get to know who you are as a person, and that's what I really do love about karate. And then piano, I feel like piano is like music in general is like a language. It's really tough, no matter if you start out in the beginning with the quote easier pieces and then move on to the more difficult pieces. They're always going to be hard. And so I feel like music also really helped me, because whenever I was frustrated with school, with music, karate, anything, I would just go away, take a break, maybe take a nap, breathe for a couple of minutes, and then go back to tackle whatever problem or subject matter would be at hand.
Right. So, and Ellen, believe it or not, him and I were having a really nice conversation on the way here about siblings, right? He has more knowledge in his brain than a lot of people. We talked about the cost of raising a child, and he's already done his research why people have to think before they have children. So tell us a little bit about we were talking about college, and you know, when you have one or two children, you could spend more time with them, you could devote your attention to them so that they can succeed. And me being one of 18 children, yeah, I do agree with birth control. I mean, I just don't know, it was a really rough challenge in life that we had with no resources and no time.
Right. So, when I was like 7 or 8, younger, I wanted siblings. I wanted a couple of brothers, some sisters. But now, moving on to my teenage years and moving on in next year, actually in high school, I feel like if you're an only child or you have a sibling, if you're one kid, your parents are going to have much more time to you and they can help you out. Whereas I'm seeing in my school people who are one of seven kids, or like in Masita's case, one of 18. That's insane.
I agree.
You get left behind a lot, yeah. Right? Yeah. When there's 18 of you. Yeah. You get forgotten at the restaurant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you talk to a lot of kids in your school with multiple siblings.
Yeah, and they said that it's super tough because if they're stuck on a math problem, their parents might not be there because they might be helping another kid or going to their ballet performance or something like that. And there's just so many of them that it's hard to manage all of them in like the perfect scenario that you would expect. But I feel like if you have one or two kids, it's a lot easier and a lot cheaper too, because kids are expensive. College alone is like, I found a quote out there, college alone is like buying a nice Mercedes and just throwing it off the bridge every year.
Well, that is quite a visual. Yes. That is quite the visual.
So we want to see you succeed in life, right? And Ellen and I feel like the world is yours. You're one of those children that when people talk to you, they could feel your enthusiasm, and we can feel like you're going to do great things. What do you plan to do when you succeed? What are you going to do with all that cash?
So I plan to help others just like now. I really do want to create different nonprofit organizations just to try and help people who are disabled, who are born with birth defects, and people who just aren't as born with the same gifts that we have or that I have with four functioning limbs. And I just want to help others so that they can live life to the fullest and that they can enjoy them being on this planet, and that there's a reason why they're here and why God created them.
Right, so find your purpose in life, right?
Right, yeah.
So Karen, so let's just introduce him again, right? We're talking to Karen Shea. His mother, Dr. Nikita Dhruv, is a good friend of mine. She's an endocrinologist, one of the best. I like her a lot. I've always liked her. So tell us, what are your strengths and weaknesses? Because you're only 13, but I feel like you could answer this question.
So I feel like my strengths are in my schooling, and I really use this knowledge that I've pretty much from Kumon that's been given to me in math and reading to my advantage. Now, as I stated previously, when making the artificial hand with my friends, we sized up his good and bad hand using geometry and trigonometry and skills that I've learned from Kumon or from going online and like Khan Academy, and I've just been using those to my advantage. But I feel like what my weakness is, which I really need to acknowledge and try and build off of, is thinking that I can kind of help everyone in this world by myself.
Yeah, don't get frustrated. And, yeah. That's my problem too. I want to help a lot of people, but then, like, you know, Ellen is a very good mentor in that she's taught me how to focus only on a few things at a time. You could only do so much at a time, and you have to kind of let something slide off your back.
But when you do those four or five things really well, the ripple effect of those things, you don't really get to see it. So people say, oh, I'm a multitasker, and I'm like, nobody's really that great at multitasking.
Right. You make mistakes.
That just means you're dividing your energy,
yeah,
and you're not giving anything your full energy or your full attention, much like you had to do with the hand,
right,
with creating that hand. I mean, you have to give it your full attention so that way you don't make mistakes. So, you know, when we talk about those types of things, when you focus on just a few things, your frustration level is diminished a little bit,
right,
more, and you're able to have that ripple effect of all the things that you're creating. Because just think about that monofilament and the creation that you created with that hand. How many different limbs now, or how many different applications could that one hand or that one piece that you did, how many different ways it can that be used?
Right.
Just the mechanics behind it.
Right.
And it's just brilliant.
It is.
Thanks.
So before we go, we have a few more minutes. I wanted to ask you really quick, Karen. A lot of 13-year-olds are there facing anxiety and bullying, and they've got situations that they can't cope with. How do you cope with rejection? Have you ever had a situation where something was rejected?
Yeah. So many times, to be more specific, in, I believe, third or fourth grade, I did a science fair project, and I believe I placed second or third. And I know that might sound silly. Oh, wow, second or third, that's amazing. But me being a third grader, I was kind of devastated. And I thought that, look, I need to get this first place. And so my mom sat me down and was like, look, you're not going to be the best at everything. So you need to really work out this. And next year, you have two options. You're going to either do science fair again, or you're just going to quit. Which do you want to do? And I really wanted to quit, but I said, you know what? I'm going to persevere and I'm going to do this. But it was just that talk with my mom that really helped me realize I'm not going to be the best at everything. There's going to be somebody out there who's better, but I need to at least give it my all and just really try at certain things. Like, as we were saying previously, you can't be good at everything, right?
Yeah.
And you can't do like tons of different things. You have to give your energy just to a couple things or one big thing. And I feel like that was me a couple years ago as well, because I wanted to do 15 different extracurricular activities, 30 different instruments. I wanted to do everything. But I realized I can only do so much. I only have 24 hours in each day. And so,
and you have to make the grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get in trouble with your mom if you don't make the grade. You know, you remind me so much of my son. I remember when he came home from college once and he said he was going to quit UCF. And I started to cry. I said, well, I didn't come from Trinidad and Tobago with $5 in my pocket for you not to go to college. You got to have a trade or academic or something in this world. You just can't do nothing. And I cried like a baby, because then I gave him a choice. Either you find a job or you go back to school, but you have to live the life of that job. If you make $10 an hour, you're going to have to live the life of $10 an hour, $9, $15, whatever it is. But life is about choices, right?
Right.
And
right,
at some like, point, you have to, you know, make up your mind what you're going to do. But really quick, we have a couple of minutes, and I wanted to ask you really quick about the Duke Talent Identification Program. We only have like a minute left.
No, we
you
had three or four.
Yeah, you did that for 3 years, and tell us a little bit about that program.
Okay, so basically, the Duke TIPS program, I actually just recently got back a week ago from the three-week program. So basically, Duke, the College Duke, organizes and sponsors this program where they look for talented young individuals, and they go off to a specific college campus. I chose Trinity University in San Antonio for the past 3 weeks. We learn different things. I took biochem, and so we learned different classes and courses for those 3 weeks, or 1 week if you're a little bit younger. And we had a balance between academics as well as recreational. So we played kickball, foursquare, had a blast, and it was so much fun. But what they do for the one-week programs, I believe you have to make a certain grade on your state exams. Like in Florida, we have the FCATs, where you have to make a certain grade, or like the SAT and 10. And then once you move on to middle school, you have to score a 90 percentile on the ACT or the SAT to be eligible to go to the three-week program. And it was just great experience to be with people who want to help others, and people who are just brilliant.
Like-minded people.
Exactly.
So really quick, what do you think about testing in Florida? You know, now that I'm running for office, I always hear people talking about too much testing. How do you prepare for testing, and do you think we have too much?
So I feel like testing is a good thing, but sometimes it could be too much. Like, for example, when we have so much testing that gets these kids super anxious and scared, and sometimes even depressed, as we were talking about earlier.
It's not good then.
It's not good, yeah. But I feel like we have to educate our kids, since they're going to be our next generation. They're going to shape the world in a different way. In a couple of years when they all grow up, including me. And I feel like to educate them and help them and see if they really know and understand what they're being taught is important. But when it comes to the state where millions of young teens are getting scared and sometimes depressed, I think that's a little too much.
Insight from the people who are actually doing it.
Yes.
I love it.
He's so
well,
sweet.
Sita, unfortunately, we only have a few seconds left, and I wanted to make sure that we thanked again our sponsors. Thank you again so much. And Kieran, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Dr. Ume,
for calling in. And we will see you or hear you next week right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess.